Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and in line, I got my main man, Josh, coming out of Ottawa.
This is the most excited that I've been for preseason coming up in a very long time, if not ever. And it's coming up in 3 days.
My God, man, I cannot wait. By the time you guys are listening to this, it will have already started, so I hope you're really digging into these games, even though it's just preseason. We're going to keep going with our division previews today, and first up, we have the Golden State Warriors of the Pacific Division. I guess they had a pretty good offseason. They did win the ship again, obviously. They signed Jonas Jerebko, who's obviously a good role player. Re-signed Kevin Durant. And I think they got a pretty good big man. I think his name is DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, and they have the luxury to, bring him back later on the season and let him, slowly get back in the thick of things. And then as the playoffs roll around, ramp it up a little bit, give him more minutes and try to fit him into the lineup. And if he doesn't work out, they still have the big men they were using last year and they can, again, just use Draymond at center whenever they need to.
No.
So it's a win-win.
They don't have the same big men. They lost JaVale and Zaza. Come on.
Well, big men that were actually playing in the most meaningful games, let's just say.
No, David West retired, didn't he?
He did retire, but in terms of having Kevon Looney and Jordan Bell playing the majority of the center minutes. So
I'd rather have JaVale than Kevon Looney. It's relaxed.
He's definitely more exciting to watch, but
exactly.
He's not a better player, that's for sure.
And so this team is just getting stronger and stronger as the days go by, right? Literally as DeMarcus's Achilles recovers. He's expected back in what, January, February?
Yeah, but they might delay that till March, depending on, how he does in the next couple months.
What do you mean? Just to see where he's at?
Yeah, they're not going to rush him back at all, so they might just have him play on their G League team for a little bit once he's actually able to play 5-on-5 basketball. A lot of players do that nowadays, right? They come back and they play the 5-on-5 basketball in the G League, and then, once the coaches see that they're, hopefully ready to come back and play against much better competition in the NBA, then they start them off with a small amount of minutes and work their way up.
Imagine fighting for your, basketball career in the G League. And then out of nowhere, DeMarcus Cousins rolls up. How pissed would you be?
Yeah, that'd be brutal. Plus, he's the one taking all the private jets to each of the cities, whereas they have to take the bus everywhere, I think. So
No, they fly.
A lot of the teams don't. Depends how far they're going, I guess.
Yeah,
but I know they don't have a big budget. Plus, they don't stay in, luxury hotels, whereas I'm sure DeMarcus would be staying in, the five-star hotels. Well, they'd be staying in, not Motel 6s, but a lesser type of
hotel. It's a Holiday Inn Express.
Yeah. DeMarcus ain't staying there, that's for sure.
Oh, hell no, man. He's too good for that. But this team, I don't know, it's pretty much the same thing, right?
They're just running it back, and everyone expects them to win again, which they obviously should win again this year just based on the talent level. And once DeMarcus gets back into the fold and into the starting lineup, they arguably have the best starting five of all time.
Oh my God, it'll literally be a five of all-stars.
Yeah, it's insanity, but we've seen this in the past where, teams have just loaded up on, five positions and everyone expects them to be, next level, obviously, but this team has, the proven commodities and they've been together for the last, 2 years in KD's case, but longer than that with the other, the other big three. So
That's the thing, though. With a lot of those teams, you've seen, take the Lakers in 04, for example, where you had Shaq and Kobe, and then they bring in future Hall of Famers at that point, Peyton and, Karl Malone, right? You have guys who you are bringing in to have new chemistry with the team rather than just expanding on it at this point. So right now, this team has zero issues with where they're going. I mean, they're obviously the favorites for the year. I don't know. There's not much to really say about them. They're just a powerhouse, and everyone expects them to win it again.
Yeah, and they can play in any which way, too. They can play small. They have the best small ball lineup in the NBA, and now they have DeMarcus, and they can punish teams now that decide to switch and play that strategy against them like Houston did last year. If they decide to switch like the 1-5 pick and roll with Curry and Cousins, then you have a guy like Chris Paul and DeMarcus Cousins, and you have to try to switch somebody from the wing onto DeMarcus, whether that's like, you know, James Harden or whoever they have, you know, Carmelo Anthony, if he's in the game, PJ Tucker, and that's just not going to be a good matchup for them. And he's going to kill the boards, the offensive boards, with teams not being able to really double team him, and then also not being able to put one or two guys on him to box him out as well. So it's going to be tough.
What did you think about the Celtics saying that, or I guess it was Kyrie saying on media day that they could beat the Warriors in a 7-game series? I think they could do it if they got hot enough. They have all the right pieces to, you know, essentially switch 1-5 or like 2-5.
Yeah, I've said it before. I think the only teams that could possibly beat this Golden State team, I mean, a lot of things have to go right, obviously, but I think that Boston could do it and Toronto has a lineup to do it as well. Both those teams can play. I think so. I mean, both those teams have the ability to play big and small, and both of those teams have really quick players in the perimeter and a lot of players that can switch, you know, at least 2-4, if not 1-4. And they can throw different lineups at Golden State that could cause them a little bit of problems. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that those two teams could give them problems. Toronto's been giving them, you know, Golden State problems the last 3 years, but now they have Kawhi Leonard, who's been Golden State killer the last, well, ever since, you know, Golden State became this powerhouse. He's been one of the players that has been able to really have consistently good games against them. And he plays well against KD, obviously. So he's one of the only guys that can really defend KD and do a decent job, at least, to where the team doesn't have to continually bring over help and leave these guys open on the perimeter.
Let me get this straight. So with Boston, you'd obviously have Kyrie, Jaylen Brown, Tatum, Hayward, and Horford, right? Like, that's your ideal starting five. Off the bench, you have guys like Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris, Aaron Baines. So it's a pretty good lineup. Like, they're pretty deep. Who would you have on the Raptors going against the death lineup? Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Kawhi. Who's the 4-5?
I would say it's OG and Siakam, and I think that they should experiment throughout the year with those two guys against smaller lineups to see if the chemistry can work and they can, you know, become switchable when they play that lineup. And obviously play JV in situations where a team like Golden State plays Kevon Looney and Jordan Bell and just try to punish them on the inside when he's in the game. So you probably shouldn't play more than 20 minutes a game against a team like Golden State. But I think a guy like Siakam, I think he's going to break out this year and show that he can play basically 1-5 on defense and be extremely switchable, sort of in the mold of Draymond Green. And just be a disruptor out there. I think that both of those teams are extremely deep this year. It may be the only year where they're, you know, 9 or 10 deep with really quality players because they have to make some decisions in the offseason, obviously, and they can't keep everyone. Obviously, Toronto has Kawhi Leonard. That's a big question mark, obviously. And then Boston has decisions with Kyrie Irving and how they want to proceed moving forward. If they sign him, then they're basically stuck with a team that's going to be way over the luxury tax. So I think this year, both of those teams are at least 10 deep, if not 12 deep, and they could cause Golden State Warriors some problems in the right situation, especially if they get home court.
Wow, home court. You think the Warriors don't get home court this year? Their over-under is at 62.5. Last year they had 58 wins. I don't see anyone in the West contending with them for first place like last year with Houston.
Yeah, Houston's a really good, you know, regular season team, so I could see them creeping up to the 60-win mark again this year if everything, you know, goes right with them health-wise. But in the Eastern Conference, you have, most of the teams in the East, I guess all the teams in the East really are playing, you know, around 50 games against Eastern Conference, right? So you're playing against lesser competition, which means more wins, especially against the bottom part of the East. So I think their win total is going to be, you know, padded a little bit in playing the Orlandos and you know, the dregs of that conference multiple times, 3 or 4 times instead of playing them twice, yeah, like in the West.
That's fair. All right. I can see that. What do you think of their over-under, 62.5?
It all depends on if they decide to show up or not, so it's really hard to say, and I think that Steve Kerr is going to rest these guys a lot throughout the year as well. But they are still pretty deep, and the one question they have going into the season anyway is Patrick McCaw's contract extension. He's still a restricted free agent right now, and he hasn't signed a contract yet, so he hasn't shown up to training camp. So if he's not in the fold, obviously they're not as deep, but obviously this team is still fully loaded. I don't know. I'm going to take a slight over just because it is the Warriors, and they are just that damn good, and they had some injury issues last year, so... if they stay relatively healthy, I think they'll go over.
Yeah. Wow, I totally forgot about Patrick McCaw. That's a really good point. Is he... He's healthy enough to play, right? Like, he played in the playoffs last year?
Yeah, he eventually came back from that awful back injury when Vince Carter undercut him. He seemed to be healthy in the last few remaining games that he did play in. But the thing is, if he's not playing, then you have to rely on regular season Andre Iguodala, who doesn't really care about the regular season.
He's not going to show up during the season.
Yeah, so I mean, if he's not playing at a relatively high level, then you're playing a rookie like, you know, Jacob Evans or even Quinn Cook in really, really small ball lineups. Or, again, Sean Livingston, who also hasn't really taken the regular season that seriously in the last year at least. So they don't have as much, you know, bench depth as you would think just based on... Iguodala just deciding that he's going to chill for most of the year and then show up in the playoffs, Robert Horry style.
Iguodala's got a dirty mac on players' moms. He's kind of busy during the year, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, man's got to do what a man's got to do.
He's a little sidetracked.
But yeah, I mean, if anybody gets injured, especially in the backcourt, then it could get interesting in terms of them dropping in the standings a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, they have so much firepower, it's hard to see that happening unless both Steph and KD... get injured at the same time.
Yeah. I think one of the main reasons they didn't hit their over-under last year was because, like, most of the guys were, like you said, sitting a lot, or Steph had that long injury that was, like, 3 or 4 months, right? Like, he was out for a while.
Yeah, I think he only played between 50 and 60 games or so.
Yeah. So as a result, obviously, you're going to get less wins with Steph Curry not on the floor. That being said, I think this year they end up staying pretty healthy. I don't think they're going to really push any of the players that much, and like you said, it's going to be a lot of the bench rule. Eventually they'll have to bring in, I think they will bring back Patrick McCaw. I guess right now it's just like a contract dispute, right? Like, they just can't agree on a number.
Yeah, I believe so. And no other team really has any cap space besides the Kings right now, and the Kings obviously haven't shown any inclination that they want him, so yeah, I think it's a matter of like how long they're going to sign him for, the amount of years, I think.
Yeah. So watch out for McCaw and Jordan Bell this year, because I think he's going to have a big year with all these guys sitting as well. KD's just going to chill a lot, so it's a lot of time at the four for Jordan Bell, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and honestly, you could definitely argue that Jordan Bell's a better fit in the system than DeMarcus Cousins, and I think that might be proven once DeMarcus gets back. I don't think it's going to be as easy as a fit as a lot of people expected, especially after... that initial freak out of people, you know, hearing about the news and being like, oh my God, this is not fair. But DeMarcus Cousins might actually do more harm to their lineup than good.
No, it's relax. Relax.
He's never shown that he can fit into a team, into a role where he's not asked to be the main guy. So on this team where he's basically going to be option number 3, 4, if not 5 sometimes,
No, he's not going to be option number 5 because no one's ever going to put Draymond in front of him. One.
No, but Draymond handles the ball a lot in their system, right? So yeah, DeMarcus is not a guy that's going to handle the ball in the, you know, the high post, then he's going to be a guy setting picks on the perimeter. So
just because you handle the ball doesn't mean you're a number one. You're an option though. You're just a facilitator. No one wants Draymond to shoot.
No, of course not. But Draymond, in terms of, like, usage, like, he's the one setting up the plays a lot of the time, right? So if DeMarcus is not really involved in the play, then he might be option 5 on a lot of sets, so.
Yeah, I guess that's how you interpret the word option, then. I don't think he'll have an issue with it. He's also never been on a team with this much veteran experience, with this type of winning culture. You know what I mean? Like, those Sacramento years were a wash. Last, what, year and a half that he had in New Orleans? Half of which was already hurt, so he had like one full year between 2 years there. I don't know. I don't think it's bad. I think he'll turn around a lot easier than people are expecting him to.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I'm a Boogie fan, and I expect him to be a devastating force on this team. I'm just saying it could go in the opposite direction just based on what we've seen, especially during his time in Sacramento.
He will be fine. Let's move on. Let's go to LA, but not the Lake Show. We're going to the other side of the stadium. We're going to take that tunnel across. We're going to the Clippers. What did they do? They got your boy Marcin Gortat, who apparently can't move anymore. Your boy Emoji Tattoo, Mike Scott. Luke Mbamute. Fellow Canadian Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And Jerome Robinson. And they also re-signed Avery Bradley. Pretty big deal. They kind of lost out on DeAndre and Austin Rivers, though. Personally, I like Austin Rivers for what he is.
Yeah, he showed a lot of improvement last year, even though, you know, he's a coach's son and people made fun of that.
That's okay.
But he has made a lot of strides, especially with his jump shot. His three-point shooting's gone up the last 2 years, I believe. And he's been a pretty good defensive player ever since he came in the league, really. So he's a competitor. He tries hard.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of him finding the right role in the team, and I think he did that last year, especially.
Yeah, he'll be good in Washington. But this Clippers team is kind of just like a mismatch of guys now. It's kind of weird. Like, I understand why they traded for Marcin Gortat, just because DeAndre left. But I don't like that fit at all. He's not very good defensively anymore. He doesn't really move. His pick and roll game is slow. He's kind of just close to the end of his career. I don't even think he's going to play for like the whole year. He should just retire mid-year again.
Yeah, sort of like that football player did last week.
Yeah, exactly. And then, Mike Scott comes off the bench, I guess, at the four?
Yeah, I think Mike Scott will just be the replacement for Tobias Harris when he needs a rest. And Mike Scott was like scorched earth last year, especially against the Raptors. He didn't miss a shot, it seemed like, in the playoffs. And his mid-range shooting was, I think he was top five in mid-range shooting last year. So he had
so
a
random.
He had a real bounce back year last year. Yeah, it was a very odd thing. He has a nice looking shot, though. And his emoji tattoos are hilarious, too.
Yeah, so what are we projecting as a starting lineup? You got, Patrick Beverley, Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris. Who's at the four?
I think Tobias is at the four.
Oh, and Mbamute at the three?
No, Danilo Gallinari.
Oh, how did I forget Danilo? Oh, that's my bad.
Well, that's not your fault. He hasn't really played much in his NBA career.
Former Nuggets star, though.
Yeah, and for then, 60 games a year, if that.
Tops, yeah. And then Gortat at the 5, / Boban.
I wish.
Montrezl Harrell. More realistically, yeah, Montrezl Harrell.
If they had Boban at the rim, and then you just had Beverly and Bradley just, you know, basically being unleashed against backcourts and just full-court pressing the entire way, they'd be a pretty fun team to watch.
It wouldn't be fun. It'd be so boring. They would just be a defensive monster. Come on, man. That wouldn't be fun. It would be fun in like for basketball nerds, but not general public. It'd be low-scoring games.
Anything involving Boban is fun. Take that back.
My bad. So what do you think about this team? I don't know. I'm picturing like a 10th seed for them. I can't see them actually doing any damage. They have a bunch of role players, basically.
Yeah, like they have a lot of guys in the team that I like individually, but as you said, there's a lot of, you know, mismatch parts in terms of their full lineup. Just looking at it, you know, from a five-man lineup perspective, I think Tobias Harris is obviously the best player, and he made a lot of strides last year. He shot, I think, 40% from three, which is something nobody expected from him.
That didn't last very long, also. He started off really hot and then, you know, cooled down a lot.
He was still pretty consistent throughout the year, though. I mean, shooting, I think, 39 or 40% throughout the course of the year is pretty impressive, especially being, I think he was number one option for at least 3 months last year. So they have to look at either whether they're going to re-sign him in the next offseason as well. And, yeah, with the rest of this team, they have a lot of players that would be rotation players on pretty much any NBA team. I mean, you have a guy like Milos Teodosic, who's going to be a third stringer now behind Beverly and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And their other draft pick this year, Jerome Robinson, is going to be playing behind Bradley and Lou Williams. So they're pretty much three deep at a lot of their positions. And a lot of guys that need minutes to develop or, you know, probably won't be happy in this situation. So I could definitely see them as a team that's going to be active around the trade deadline.
Yeah, they sort of remind me of the Nuggets a few years ago when you had like Jameer Nelson still on the team. Fareed was fighting for minutes. Gallinari was on that team as well. Like a bunch of guys who would be like you said, third, fourth, fifth options on like decent teams or good teams. But on this team, they're like, they're turned into the first or second option. It's kind of weird to build your team around, you know, Danilo Gallinari and Avery Bradley. Such a bizarre concept to me, because neither of these guys are really good enough to carry a load on their own, right? Or even half a load on their own. Gallinari's going to end up playing like 50 games like he always does.
Yeah, and I think this year is just going to be like a transition year for this team as well. I mean, they're just building for next offseason, and they're trying to keep their cap space fairly flexible and trying to get two max cap slots. And again, this could be a destination for Jimmy Butler, but I don't really see them giving up assets to get Jimmy Butler. I don't really see them giving up a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They might be willing to give up Jerome Robinson and a few of their veteran players, I guess, to make the contracts work, just to get Butler in town and, you know, hopefully be able to retain him since they are his number one destination. But ideally, their ideal situation next offseason is to get Butler and Kawhi Leonard. So if they can get Butler early on, you know, a cheap deal in terms of giving up assets, then maybe they go for it as soon as Friday. You never know.
Yeah, maybe something like Harris and Harrell? Is that too much?
No, I don't think they have to give up Harris. I think that Butler's value is pretty low right now. Once a player demands a trade, their value just plummets.
But you need to match up the contract, though. That's the issue. Or like get him with a reason, right? So
it's either that. But I think a guy like Lou Williams will be a guy that they'd be including in the trade just so they can free up more minutes for their rookies. And he makes around $8 million a year, I think.
Yeah,
and they'd obviously need to replace Butler's scoring, so he'd be involved with the trade, I think, for sure.
Man, Lou Williams. Imagine him going there after Jamal Crawford leaves. My God.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting fit if that does happen. And I think they'd be a playoff contender at least if they get Butler. But without him, yeah, I mean, this team is probably not going to be the funnest team to watch, obviously.
No, they're bleak. Their over-under is 38. I've got them at like... Damn, 38 is like the right number. I'd have them around 37.
Yeah, and they do have a lot of bench depth, but it does help, you know, throughout the course of the regular season to win a lot of these, you know, tough games where, you know, certain starters are not playing as well. They can bring in a bunch of different guys to maybe get hot off the bench. But they have so many injury-prone players, I'm going to take a slight under. And obviously, Gortat's a big negative right now in their starting five. I think Harrell's going to play a lot of minutes this year. But then you have a situation where you're playing, you know, a starting front court of Tobias Harris at 6'8". And Montrezl Harrell, who's really 6'6" at center. And they're going to struggle getting defensive rebounds. And I think their best course of action with this team is just to play really fast and just try to pressure teams in the starting lineup with Bradley and Beverly. And then when you come off the bench with Lou Williams, just try to, you know, have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and him just run pick and roll every single play and just try to outscore teams.
Yo, that's your logic to, like, every team. Get out of here.
What do you mean?
Your logic is always just, yeah, you know, you're not that good. You might as well just pressure and run the ball as much as you can.
You want to play high variance game. You want to shoot a lot of threes and try to beat teams that are more talented by you by just playing the math.
I guess, but eventually you got to, you know, play some sort of defense.
Yeah, and I mean, with this backcourt, they should be able to. I mean, both of those guys are lauded as, you know, all NBA type players. But yeah. Again, Beverly and especially Danilo Gallinari, even Bradley last year, like they've been very injury prone. So
yeah, I was
if they
say,
do get injured again, yeah, it's going to be tough for them.
That starting backcourt are both coming back from season ending injuries last year. So I'm not sure what kind of condition they're in to even, you know, play that kind of minutes. Like if they can play 30 to 35 minutes right now, I'd be kind of shocked.
Yeah, and I hope at the trade deadline they trade some of these guys, so that'll open up minutes for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to show what he's capable of.
Yeah, you really like him, eh?
Yeah, fellow Canadian. He looked good in the summer league. He's just really smooth, you know? He's a good player. He's going to be good.
Did you see him on Media Day saying that he tried to put on 15 pounds of weight, but it just didn't work?
Yeah, I mean, some guys' frame just can't handle that kind of weight, especially early in their careers, and he's only 19 years old, so I think as time goes on, he's going to be able to add that weight. But, you know, his first season, he's going to play somewhat limited minutes to start off the year anyway. So hopefully he doesn't get too banged up in him being like 120 pounds soaking wet.
Poor kid, man. 120. Yeah, this team is kind of bleak. I don't know. I think you're right. They'll have to do something during the season in terms of a trade. Hopefully for Butler, because I think he would be really fun on this team. But this whole organization right now, this year, it's just, you're right, they're just waiting until next offseason. Hopefully they'll try to bring in like Kawhi and Butler and whoever else is a free agent, basically.
Hopefully they won't try to bring Kawhi.
Well, they're going to try no matter what. Let's be real.
Hopefully they won't.
Yeah. They just give up. Don't even bother trying. Don't even make the call.
Well, Kawhi is going to make it clear during the trophy ceremonies that he's going to be returning to Toronto next year. So,
yeah, he might be the first jersey that they retire.
While he's with the Raptors.
Yeah, still on the floor.
Yep.
All right, man, let's move on. Let's take that secret tunnel across, because I want to talk about the real team in L.A. The Lakers obviously got Michael Beasley, JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo, Lance Stephenson. They drafted Mo Wagner and your boys V. Mikhailuk. They re-signed KCP, and they sort of added LeBron. Well, who did they lose out on? A bunch of no-namers, basically. Guys that you wouldn't care about, like Luol Deng, Channing Frye, Brook Lopez, whatever. But they did lose out on Julius Randle and Isaiah. Probably a good thing that they didn't keep Isaiah around with LeBron coming through, you know?
Yeah, that wouldn't have been a good mix, as it was shown last year.
This team has gotten, like, a complete redo, right? They brought in basically a bunch of guys on one-year contracts out of all those veterans who, you know, you're all like, I don't know if I really want this guy on my team. The Lakers got them. They essentially got every guy that you could be skeptical about to play with LeBron.
Yeah, I think the Lakers sort of took the Clippers philosophy after they got LeBron anyway, in terms of, you know, if they weren't able to add the guys that they wanted around LeBron with, you know, Paul George and obviously San Antonio asking for the world for Kawhi, as was reported anyway, and them asking for like Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma and a first round pick, or if not, you know, two first round picks and Josh Hart. So with the Lakers not being able to get either one of those two guys, I think they just decided, you know what, we're just going to sign all these guys to one-year contracts, guys who know how to play and who they think are going to be good fits around LeBron and sort of take the pressure off him having to handle the ball so often. But when you look at this roster, you really wonder who is going to play around LeBron. Are they going to play the younger guys, or are they going to play more of the older guys and maybe even stunt the development of the young guys and not being able to play the amount of minutes that they probably need to play?
It'd be really surprising if they played the older guys a lot. You know what I mean? Like, if you play Michael Beasley 25 to 30 minutes a game this year, you're sort of making a bad decision for every young guy on the team, especially Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma. Or, like, Rondo, if Rondo ends up playing 30 to 35 minutes a game instead of Lonzo. You know what I mean? Like, it just wouldn't make sense.
Especially, yeah, and Luke Walton is a pretty progressive coach, too, so I think that he's going to probably play the younger guys more.
Yeah.
But going into the season, Lonzo Ball has his knee injury, obviously, so they've already announced that Rondo is going to be starting at point guard to start the year anyway. But that's going to be a major storyline as to once, you know, Lonzo Ball is back in the fold and, you know, able to play extended minutes, are they going to switch that up and then try to get the chemistry right between him and LeBron, obviously, and then how many minutes does he play versus Rondo? Because you can't really play them together, so there's going to be they're gonna have to make a decision as to who's going to play 30 minutes and who's going to play 18.
Yeah, I think that they'll still end up going with the young guys for the most part, especially because LeBron's already there for 4 years. Like, he's fully committed to this, right? So in the issues with Cleveland in the past was that he kept signing one-year deals with this player option in the second year. So at that point, Cleveland has to just play a bunch of veterans. They had to bring in a bunch of guys who were past their prime, but could work with LeBron. Now, LA has the opportunity to just develop the young guys. You bring in a Rondo to play with Lonzo just so he can teach him how to, you know, be a leader or whatnot.
Yeah, but Rondo's still, like, super competitive, though. So he's still going to want to play as many minutes as he can. So that could cause a huge problem in the locker room, I think, if he doesn't accept his role.
I don't think so, because Rondo, over the past couple of years, has turned into that veteran who's basically turned into a mentor for younger players. Like, look at him in Chicago. All the young players loved him, and they hated Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, but he was also still playing 30-plus minutes a game, whereas this seemed to be the first situation where he's not going to be playing extended minutes besides his short stint on Dallas where him and Carlisle didn't get along and Carlisle benched him. But he's never really been in a situation where there's been a younger player that's capable of playing extended minutes and being a good contributor that could take his role as a starting point guard in the team. So how is he going to treat that, even though he's on a one-year contract?
I think he'll be fine. I think he's gone past the hill of, you know, I need to be the guy on the team. I think, like, the way that they sold him on it would have just been, you know, come in for the year, teach our young guys how to play, teach them, like, how to be professional, all that kind of stuff, and then get paid next year. Because he's already getting paid pretty well this year. He's one of the he's the only one who's making more than, like, $5 million that they signed for on a 1 year. Lance is on 4.5, Beasley's at 3.5, JaVale's at the vet minimum. So Rondo's, I mean, I think he's got it in a pretty cushy position right now.
Yeah, I suppose so. But again, with him just showing in the last, well, I guess ever since he's been in the NBA, that he's a super competitive player. I just don't really see him giving up that role so easily. I think Lonzo's going to have to earn it, which is probably a good thing for his development anyway.
Yeah, it's even better. That's perfect.
True, but I could see Rondo not taking that well and becoming a malcontent, sort of like he did with Dallas as well. So
that's also
a possibility.
That was like 3 years ago. That was when he was just like coming off of his injuries too, right? So he thought he was like fresh. Also, Rick Carlisle isn't the easiest coach to play for, especially as a point guard.
This is true, but if Rondo sees himself as a better player than Lonzo and Lonzo gets the majority of the minutes, that could turn into a sticky situation, I think. But,
before you move on, Rondo is better than JJ Barea and Devin Harris, and Carlisle likes those guys more. That's all I'm saying.
Well, Dallas also had the number one rated offense before Rondo got there, and they thought that he would somehow improve that, and he just didn't fit at all, so he has to fit a certain type of role, and I think we also have to look at his fit with LeBron, too, since Rondo's not a spot-up shooter. And LeBron is always at his best when he has at least three spot-up shooters around him, especially at the point guard position. So if he actually goes, you know, a lot of pick and roll with LeBron, teams are just going to go way under and just force him to make shots. Whereas if you have a guy, maybe not like Lonzo, but more of a creative player that can shoot the ball with LeBron, then you can have a more devastating pick and roll action. But I think that player hasn't really arrived as of yet, obviously, and that's a player they'd be looking at in the offseason next year.
Michael Beasley, LeBron James pick and roll, hello.
Sort of funny because, like, Beasley, when I looked at this team, I think he's going to be a third stringer behind LeBron and Kyle Kuzma at the four, right? So I don't really think he's going to get a lot of minutes, especially if they play Lance behind Ingram at the three as well. There's just a lot of guys on this team that seem to need minutes.
No. They'd put Lance at the behind KCP at the two.
No. Josh Hart is getting those minutes for sure.
True. Oh, Beasley, play the five, man.
You might have to. Yeah. I mean, we haven't talked about it yet, but that's their weakest position by far. I mean, they probably have the worst center rotation out of anybody in the NBA right now.
Hold on. We just talked about the LA Clippers who are going to start Marcin Gortat, okay?
I think you can rely on Marcin Gortat over Bill McGee.
Get out of here. No, I refuse to accept this.
Golden State Warriors' JaVale McGee is not the same as JaVale McGee on any other basketball team. It's sort of like what Lance went through after he left the Pacers and he went to the Charlotte Hornets and he shot like 32% from the field. I foresee the same type of situation for JaVale where he just isn't nearly as good as he was last year when he wasn't really asked to do a whole hell of a lot.
I don't think he'll be like really good, but he'll be better than Marcin Gortat. That's all I'm saying.
Gortat. Do you see him playing more than 20 minutes a game? I mean, it's the same situation as Gortat, yeah, really.
I think he will. Because there's no other center on this team. They're going to be playing like Zubac instead. Or Mo Wagner.
Well, that's why I think this team is being a bit overrated, especially after the trade, or after LeBron signed with this team, obviously, that people are expecting to be like a top three seeded team. And I just don't see that just based on their depth and so many questions around the rotation.
I think they're like a six seed.
Yeah, I think they're going to get better as the year goes on. I think the first couple months, people are going to be freaking out because they're going to be losing a lot of games they should be winning just based on them not really gelling and not figuring out which lineups work. And then obviously Lonzo coming back is going to be a big story too, like we mentioned before. So I think it'll take until about maybe January, February before they start figuring things out and figuring out who's going to play what role. And the other situation we haven't talked about yet is Brandon Ingram and how he's going to fit as somebody who should be the second option on this team.
Well, I think he will be the second option. I don't think LeBron is going to trust anyone else to be the second option. He's not going to trust KCP. Can't really shoot that well. Obviously not any of your point guards. And Beasley, we've already established, is going to be off the bench anyways. So sort of just stuck with Ingram.
Yeah, but you have to be a really specific type of player to fit with LeBron and what LeBron wants to do on the floor. And although Ingram improved his shooting percentages last year, he didn't really shoot a lot of threes. He's more of a ball handler at this point, and obviously LeBron loves to handle the ball. And then you have Rondo, who's, you know, a guy that needs the ball as often as he can and when he's on the floor. And Lonzo, obviously, that's trying to develop. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets the majority of possessions outside of LeBron on this team.
Wild hot take. LeBron takes at least a month off while he's filming Space Jam 2. In this case, Brandon Ingram will have all the time in the world to handle the rock.
Yeah, it wouldn't be surprising.
I
it's really also going to be interesting to see if like LeBron invites any of his teammates to star in that movie as well.
Hell no. On this team? Come on.
You don't think LeVar Ball is going to make a guest appearance in Space Jam 2?
I hope not.
Maybe he'll be one of the monsters. I mean, he did average 2 points in college.
Yeah, he can't beat Michael Jordan, so maybe.
Well, he said he could, so maybe he is going to be a monster.
Man, you're right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right, so this team's over-under is 48. Do you think LeBron James is worth 13 wins on his own? Last year, they had 35 wins.
Well, I think LeBron probably is, you know, worth that amount of wins, but on this team with basically a whole new roster coming into play and us really not knowing who's going to play between the vets and the young guys, even though we think it's going to be the younger guys, but I think it's going to take them a lot of time. They're going to lose a lot of games in the first couple of months of the season, so I think that their total is going to be more so around like 45.
Yeah.
But I think they could be a really dangerous playoff team.
I don't think so.
I mean, in terms of winning a round or two and giving teams a lot of problems, I think that it's possible they get to round two for sure.
Yeah, I think LeBron will just go beast during the playoffs, so they'll probably get to round two. But yeah, it depends on the matchups that you get, essentially, right?
Like, I mean, I wouldn't put them over, you know, Golden State, Houston, OKC, Utah. But, you know, playoff series, against, especially against, like, OKC and Utah, I mean, you have the best player in the series, so normally that means you're going to win the series.
Yeah, usually. But then you have, you know, guys like Beasley and Lance.
Yeah. And that's the other thing we haven't talked about yet, is how Lance and LeBron are going to work together.
I think they'll be fine. Like, realistically, everyone's making fun of it. I think they'll be fine. I don't see any issues. Lance will just have to... If Lenz can learn how to have a consistent jump shot, he'll get plenty of playing time.
Yeah.
But he needs to establish a consistent jump shot, which he hasn't done in his career.
And again, he hasn't played well anywhere besides Indiana in his career. So if I could see him getting cut if it doesn't work out. They have so many guys need minutes on this team. If he is a malcontent, I think he's the most likely to be a malcontent on this team. And if that happens, then, you know, you can put Kyle Kuzma in his spot and just give him more minutes.
You're so down on these guys, man. How do you think Kuzma will do? I think he's going to thrive with LeBron.
Yeah, I think he'll be the best fit with LeBron. I think he'll probably fit better than Ingram, to be honest. I think Ingram's a better player, but Kuzma's game fits better, I think, with him being a better outside shooter and being a better spot-up guy.
Yeah.
And a guy that can, you know, get to spots on the floor, like cut to certain spots on the floor, and just... He has a sort of, like, Anton Jamison type of game, where, like, he just gets spots, and he just, like, throws up those little floaters, and gets inside, and uses angles to get a shot off, so...
That's a great comparison. Anton Jamison. That's a good one. I never thought of that. I can see that. Anton did pretty well with LeBron, didn't he?
Yeah, he did okay.
He was alright.
He was in the latter part of his career at that point, but I think if he was, you know, Golden State Anton at that time, they would have fit pretty well together. Yeah. He would have scored a lot of points with LeBron, that's for sure.
He's no Danielle Marshall.
Definitely not. Nobody is, though.
All right, so we're both saying under for this team, but a possible monster in the playoffs. By monster, I mean one round.
Yes, yes. I could see them upsetting either Utah or OKC if that lines up. I don't really see them being Houston, though.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go across the desert. I want to take it to Phoenix because this team kind of did a lot during the offseason. You know what I mean? They got Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, Rashawn Holmes from the Sixers, which I think is going to be pretty big for them. And they did draft DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges. And they re-signed Devin Booker a day before he like broke his wrist, which is hilarious. They lost out on Marquise Chris, Jared Dudley, Brandon Knight, whatever. Good riddance to all those contracts.
Yeah, the one thing that they didn't do is address their point guard situation, and it seems like from all the reports that are coming out, they're planning to put Devin Booker at point guard, which in this year where they're probably not going to make the playoffs, it's probably the best thing they can do, I think, and just getting him the reps as a guy that can bring the ball up the floor and just be the main creator, sort of like with what Houston has done in the last few years with James Harden. And I think that's going to make him into a better player overall once they're actually ready to compete for the playoffs.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess Houston is like the bigger name for that kind of thing. But if you look at a team like Denver, for example, putting Jamal Murray as their point guard, or like the Wolves before forcing Zach LaVine to play point, it's sort of just expanding the guy's repertoire into something that he's not comfortable with, you know, teaching him how to be a better player rather than just getting his own.
Yeah, and he's probably going to lead the league in turnovers this year, maybe outside of Russell Westbrook.
So hard.
I have to throw a one shot in every single time. Oh, and DeRozan's shot's coming later, I'm sure. But yeah, with Booker, I mean, he's probably going to have to play point guard because they don't have anybody else. They have Isaiah Cannon, Shaquille Harrison, De'Anthony Melton, and Eli Okobo. So
no, they
don't. Most NBA fans haven't heard of any of those guys. I mean, Shaquille Harrison is a cool name and everything, but...
Yeah, let's not mention any of those guys.
And honestly, they have so many players in the wing that they brought back and brought in with, you know, Trevor Ariza, obviously, and Mikal Bridges, that playing Booker at point guard will open up minutes for those guys to get the amount of minutes they probably need in order to be effective. Because they have, obviously, Bridges coming in with him probably playing around 15, 20 minutes a game. TJ Warren just got re-signed to a big contract or contract extension for 4 years, I believe, at around $50 million. And obviously Josh Jackson's a player that's developing and needs his reps. So I think he's going to be starting. I think they're going to start Ariza as well, either at the four or the three. And Ryan Anderson is a new addition as well. I think he's going to play a lot of minutes. I think the biggest question this year, I think beyond, you know, how Devin Booker reacts as the starting point guard is what they're going to be doing with Dragan Bender. Because in looking at their depth chart, he looks like he's going to be a third stringer behind, you know, guys like Ariza, Ryan Anderson, DeAndre Ayton. And obviously they still have Tyson Chandler behind Ayton as well. And then, as you said, they had brought in Rashawn Holmes, who might play spot minutes. So they have to figure out if they're going to decide to continue with, you know, Dragan Bender's development, or they're just going to give up on him and, you know, sort of let him expire as a, you know, rookie contract.
Yeah, I think halfway through the year, we'll know exactly where they stand with Dragan Bender. Either he'll be playing like 35 minutes a game or 10. You know what I mean? Like, he hasn't really proven much. Although he's still young, he's only 20 years old this year. He's been in the league for, is this his fourth year coming up now?
Third year, I believe.
Okay. Oh, that's right. He's gone through three summer leagues and hasn't really done anything. As a guy in your third summer league, you should have been dominating. And he was, you know, barely seen. So I don't know. I used to love the kid when he was coming in. I thought he had so much potential, but he really has not shown a thing.
Yeah, he looked like he could be the type that could play, you know, point forward almost, and being a guy that can play make off the dribble at the four position or even at the five in today's NBA. And he's shown more development on the defensive end and being able to switch onto guys than he has on offense. His shot, it looks nice, but he doesn't shoot enough. And when he does, it doesn't go in often enough.
Nope.
And playmaking, he just sort of, like, he seems scared sometimes when he gets the ball. He's not really sure what to do. Yeah. And I mean, like, a lot of times with, you know, those types of players in their, you know, early 20s, I think they have to be put in the right position, and being put into a team like Phoenix, who's been tanking the last couple of years, may not be his best opportunity. So I think the next team that he goes to, if it's a good organization that can properly develop younger players, he could turn into the player everyone expected him to be afterwards. And most big men take until, you know, 24, 25 years old to really show what they can do. So I think he might be a player that may not develop in Phoenix, but the next team that he goes to, he might become a pretty good rotation player.
Yeah, maybe he can go to San Antonio, be like every other foreign big man.
Yeah, I mean, if he goes to an organization like San Antonio that can give him minutes and give him guidance, because that's just one thing that he hasn't really got, you know, beyond Tyson Chandler, who doesn't really play the same type of position that he plays, obviously.
Complete opposite.
So, yeah.
Go to San Antonio, learn how to take mid-range shots with the rest of the team, and then you'll be set.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, with Tyson Chandler, he's going to be a good mentor to DeAndre Ayton. And I think Aiden's going to get a lot of opportunities early in the year if Booker's out for the first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah, Ayton, man, that dude is huge. Like, he is a monster. He's, whenever you hear about rookies, you always hear, you know, are they NBA ready? Is their body developed? Dude, his body has been developed for years to be in the NBA.
Yeah, he came out of the womb with that body.
Jesus Christ. And he's only 20. That dude is going to be a monster this year. He's going to have all the touches he wants. Like you said, especially with Booker out for the first portion of the season. Man, it's going to be him and like Ryan Anderson chucking up shots. If Ryan Anderson plays. If not, it'll be Trevor Ariza and what, Josh Jackson with him? Dude.
Jackson loves to shoot, and so does TJ Warren. So they have a lot of guys in this roster on the wing especially that love to shoot. And they're going to have to figure out their rotation to hopefully not get blown out of every game like they did last year.
Well, by your logic, they're just going to run a lot and shoot the ball a lot.
Well, that's what bad teams do, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Who's their coach? Do you remember?
Yeah, they brought in Igor Kokoschkov. He's been an assistant coach for a while in the NBA, and he's been the Slovenian national team's head coach as well. I think they won one of their qualifying tournaments with Luka Doncic and Goran Dragic from Miami. With those two being the dynamic duo. And he's had pretty good success around the league and obviously with the Slovenian national team. And a lot of people expected them to take Doncic because he had the relationship with him before.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Okay.
But right, ultimately, obviously, with Ayton, so it's going to be an interesting year for them.
We can expect a lot of threes, a lot of ball movement, I'm assuming.
Yeah, a lot of experimentation, I think. I think that's part of Booker playing at the one. So I think there's going to be a lot of different lineups you're going to see this year that you haven't seen in the past. And he's going to be very experimental and seeing what he has with this roster. And then, again, they're probably going to be a lottery team again this year. So hopefully, as you said before, Ayton gets all the minutes and touches that he needs to develop a lot quicker. And him and Booker can create a, you know, a really good 1-2 punch going forward on the Western Conference.
Yeah. All right, so... You're correct about being a lottery team. Their over under is at 28.5. Last year they had 21 wins. I'm still going under, man. This is a tough West. I mean, they don't really have that much. Booker's going to be hurt for the first portion of the season, and yeah, their rotation is kind of just a mess and just, you know, piecing things together. I don't think they're going to get more than 25 wins.
Yeah, the combination of relying on a rookie big man to be one of your main producers on both sides of the ball. Like, DeAndre Ayton didn't have a good year last year in college on the defensive side of the ball, and now he's going to have to learn the NBA system and having to guard all these really fast or much faster players in the NBA versus in college. And, yeah, I mean, the fact that they don't have a point guard and they don't have a secondary creator, really, and then putting all, you know, basically the entire onus of the offense on Devin Booker creating everything for them. I think that might end up tiring them out at the midway point of the season. And they may look to make a trade at the trade deadline just to take the pressure off him. And if they don't, then again, they don't really have anybody else to take that load. I mean, Josh Jackson thinks that he's that guy based on how he played in the second half of last year, but
so harsh, man.
His offense is a mess.
Yeah, he's a wild card. The guy does not slow down at all. And but on the other hand, he did cut his hair. Kind of optimistic, you know?
Yeah,
sort of the
same maybe thing that'll help a shot.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't weigh him down as much.
And plus, when you actually get to the apex of the shot, the hair is not going to be in the way where you're not going to, you know, pull it all the way back, which is a problem that, you know, those guys had, obviously. And then Marcus Smart had the same problem, too.
Really? Marcus Smart? His hair has always been short, though.
No, he had a problem with that in college, I believe.
He just needed some NBA teaching, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, let's go to the last team. The Sacramento Kings, everyone's favorite. Somehow they weaseled Nemanja Bjelica and Yogi Ferrell from their commitments to previous contracts. They somehow got Ben McLemore back on the team, which is okay. They traded for Deontay Davis, who's pretty good. And they drafted Marvin Bagley III.
On that note, they actually just waived Deontay Davis.
Oh, my bad. Sorry, Deontay Davis. My fault. I kind of like him, though. Deontay Davis is a decent player.
He had a good couple days with the Kings.
And they lost VC and Garrett Temple. I mean, this team is slightly better.
Yeah, honestly, like with them taking Yogi Ferrell and Bjelica out of their commitments, I'm not really sure why they did that in the first place, because they already have enough players at their positions that need minutes. I mean, they have Bogdan Bogdanovic, who's going to be starting once he's back from injury. He's out 4 to 6 weeks, as it was reported yesterday, with a knee surgery.
Yeah.
And then you have Buddy Hield behind him, and then with them bringing back Ben McLemore, you would assume that they want to give him minutes and see if they can, you know, have him as a reclamation project and see if they can revitalize his career. So Yogi Ferrell looks like he's going to be the third guy in the rotation at the shooting guard position.
So weird. Well, he's more of a point, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
De'Aaron Fox. I guess that's the whole logic, is that they don't really have a backup point guard.
Honestly, like, based on what Frank Jackson showed last year, like, he was actually pretty good as a second-round pick. Oh, sorry. Cut that out. Yeah, so, I mean, with Frank Mason behind De'Aaron Fox, I'd rather be playing him and developing him as a younger player than, you know, fitting in Yogi Ferrell and having him play those minutes. And Coach Yeager already said today that he's going to focus on giving the younger players more minutes. So I think that you're going to see guys like Zach Randolph and Kosta Koufos, especially at the five position, not play nearly as much, if any, minutes, especially earlier in the season, where they might be, you know, trade assets. And they've also been involved in trade talks with Minnesota and being the third team and taking on salary. So those guys might end up getting shipped out so they can create more opportunity for the younger players to play.
Yeah, I mean, they might as well, because they really don't have any contracts on after this year. They're all short the contracts, or they're really small. Like, the highest paid guaranteed contract on the team right now is Bogdan Bogdanovic at $17.5 million for 2 years.
And that's a steal, just based on how he played last year as a 25-year-old rookie.
Yeah, they're laughing at this point in terms of contracts.
I believe they gave both Bjelica and Yogi Ferrell 3-year commitments, though, which is very odd for a team that doesn't want to take on future salary.
Ferrell got 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's so weird. Also, Ferrell's not that good of a player. So I don't even know why you would want to, you know, take him off the initial contract that he had agreed to.
Yeah, and it's not like he's a known veteran presence either that's going to give these guys guidance on how to, you know, be a quality NBA player. I mean, he's a good player off the bench for a team, but maybe he's just, you know, a guy that can be traded as part of a larger deal later on.
Yeah, I guess that's all they're really going for.
You need mid-level contracts in order to make trades work, so maybe him and even Bjelica could be included in trades at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see Zebo and Iman Shumpert's contracts getting shipped out. And Koufos.
Imagine. Yeah, Koufos is he's a solid big man.
Yeah, he's a good backup center.
Yeah,
like, imagine if the Clippers had Koufos instead of Gortat. I would feel so much better about that team.
Yeah, and honestly, like, he could definitely play a role like Baines played last year in Boston, where he plays 15 to 20 minutes a game, or in some situations 25 to 30, and just be a solid contributor out there that can just, you know, play really good defense and be in the right spots on both sides of the ball and finish with those mini hook shots that he likes. So he's been a quality player throughout his NBA, you know, career, and he's shown that he can play 20 solid minutes for a, you know, contending team. So I can see him getting moved at some point, if not getting waived.
Yeah, that's a shame. So I guess the whole team is building around De'Aaron Fox, Harry Giles, and Marvin Bagley now, right? And Bogdan, of course.
And they also have a decision, too, with Willie Cauley-Stein, who hasn't really developed as they want him to. They want him to be the next Tyson Chandler, a guy that can, you know, be a defensive anchor, and he's more focused on the offensive end, it seems.
Sorry, I had already counted him out.
I mean, he had a decent second part of the year last year. He was putting up numbers, but again, it's really hard to determine whether those numbers actually meant anything, if he had any, you know, developing aspects of his game throughout the course of the second half of the year, or if it's just, you know, him playing 30 plus minutes a game and just getting numbers based on that.
Yeah, I was not sold on him whatsoever. I'm still not sold. I mean, he was fun coming out of college. I mean, he's an athletic big man who can sort of play D, like he's decent on D. But he's got no touch around the rim. He's got hands as hard as rocks. So I don't know. I'm not sold. This team is still a mess as always. They're the Kings. The classic case of just that shamble of a team. Somehow they're still playing Matt Barnes, Papa Giannis, and Caron Butler. So there's that.
Yeah, that Papa Giannis pick is going to... I mean, I don't know what they were thinking with that pick, and obviously waving him after 2 years in the league is crazy.
Yeah, he's only 21, and they waved him at like 20 years old, I guess, right? Because it was last year. What the hell?
This team, yeah, and he was so projected confused as a late second round pick too. So I think Vlade just saw a lot of his qualities in the player in Papa Giannis, that he's like, he's not really a mobile big man, but he had some skills and he could pass and he could hit a shot from 16 feet, and Vlade thought that maybe he can become Vlade from the 90s, and that just obviously didn't work out. But I'm pretty excited to see Harry Giles, though. Obviously, last year he was injured the entire year, so he's coming in the same situation as what Ben Simmons sort of went through in Philadelphia, yeah. And that he, you know, got to work out with the team, he got to see what NBA basketball is like, and got to witness the practices, obviously. So he's coming in prepared, and I think that he's going to get a lot of minutes this year. And he showed pretty well in summer league, and obviously he was one of the top recruits of the last 20 years coming out of high school before he tore up his knee twice. So I like his game. Like, his game is really smooth, and he's the type of guy that can switch, you know, at least 1 through 4, if not 1 through 5, once he, you know, he starts working out more in terms of like gaining 15-20 pounds. But I like his game. I just think that he's going to be probably their top prospect out of the jumble of players that they have here outside of Bogdanović.
I think the combination of Bagley and Giles is going to be so lethal. Like, they're going to be really fun to watch just because they're both super long and lanky guys. Bagley is more of like a traditional big man than Giles, who can like stretch the floor a bit more, but they're both pretty smooth and they'll be fun. If only they had like a good wing player to help. But hopefully De'Aaron Fox can deliver them the ball properly, and you know they'll put up a fight for the first like quarter of a game.
Yeah, and I think that Fox is going into a huge year for his career as well. A lot of people really liked him coming out of college, but honestly, last year he was pretty underwhelming. I mean, I don't really think that he showed a lot of NBA qualities last year. His shot was obviously not where it needed to be. He has NBA speed, obviously. He's one of the faster players in the NBA, yeah. But he hasn't really shown that he knows how to use that speed to get his, you know, teammates better opportunities on offense and get to the rim and get fouled and get to the free throw line and, you know, be a more efficient player. So he's going to have to take a big step in his development. And if he does that and Bogdanović comes back healthy and, you know, Marvin Bagley has a decent year, this team could win, you know, 25 games if they're lucky.
Hey, their over-under is 25, man.
Oh, there you go.
There it is. 25 wins. I don't give him that. I give him 23. There's no one to actually score on this team other than Bogdanović. Fox is going to average, what, like 12, 13 points a game? Maybe average 6, 7 assists tops? That's if like he has a really good year. We've already assumed that they're going to dump a lot of their veteran players. So it's going to be like Bielica, Bogdanović, and, you know, Giles. Ugh.
Yeah, I just hope that Fox becomes a good distributor so these big guys are actually able to get the ball in spots that they need.
I think he's too fast for his own good. I think he's so out of control whenever he plays. He just needs to, like, just take a second, slow down a bit, see where your guys are. Because a lot of guys can't run with him, you know what I mean? Like, that was the instance last year where if there's a fast break, he's just going to bolt up the court and then
wait. He's going to have guys this year with Bagley and Harry Giles. Those guys can run.
That's true.
And,
that's true.
I think the biggest thing with Fox is he's got to show somewhat of a jump shot. Like, he has to be somewhat consistent from somewhere on the floor. So when they actually run pick and roll, you know, the player guarding him doesn't go 10 feet under. to where they can't create an advantage to get, you know, the big man the ball or get him in the lane. So he has to show improvement in that area, and then maybe this team can win more games than last year.
Well, I won't lie to you. I didn't see any workout videos from him, so I'm not convinced.
Because those are so important, as Damian Lillard showed.
Exactly. I need to see workout videos from every player during the summer to see how good they've gotten in an empty gym. I love Paul Pierce.
That's why they got me here! That's why I'm here!
Yeah, I just sort of hope that they become what Dallas was last year in terms of watchability, and a team that can, you know, stay in games and be there until the end and stay competitive with this young core. Because at least in that case, they'll have, you know, something to show their fans that they are building a somewhat decent core. And they have guys that are going to be here for 3 or 4 years instead of keep shipping out their younger players because they just keep making the wrong draft picks.
You're being awfully optimistic. I will not join you in this optimism, man.
I like Bagley and Giles. I'm not a big fan of De'Aaron Fox, but I like those two guys, so I'm hopeful for them at least. And I think they will go slightly over.
Over 25?
I think so.
Wow, that's very optimistic. Good luck to you and the Kings, because I don't see it. I think that's it, unless you have any final remark?
Not really. I mean, from this division, I think all you can say is Golden State is probably going to win the championship again, and hopefully the Lakers, well, actually, we know the Lakers are going to give us as much entertainment as we can handle this year.
In summary, the Kings, not very good, the Lakers entertaining, and the Warriors probably repeat champions.
Back to back. Nobody's really talking about that either, which is sort of weird.
Three-peat?
Yeah.
It's because, that's a conversation for a different time. We can talk about media narrative on its own issue.
That is true.
All right. That's it. That's all for this week, guys. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Follow us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Hit us on Instagram and Twitter. And until next time, peace.